Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome again to the Rise Up, See Red podcast. This is episode 190 of the show. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site, with my co-host, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site. Seth, we are here. We're just a little bit. This is our last preview show before our mock draft in a couple of weeks. Are we ready for the draft? Because I'm ready for the draft, because we're ready.
It can't get here soon enough, right? Like, we have 2 weeks. I mean, when this... We're recording literally 2 weeks from about 2 hours after the Cardinals would have picked. They 15, they'll usually pick around 7:30. And we're recording at 9 at night. And so it's going to be, you know, we'll be having already written probably roughly 18 articles a piece covering whatever moves the Cardinals make. With the rumors now, you and I are kind of terrified at this idea that the Cardinals may trade up and forfeit their entire day two of the draft. And Jess and I are going to have nothing to do on Friday night of the 2018 NFL draft. So, you know, we're kind of sitting here now hoping, going, okay, well, if they don't move up for a quarterback, let's just draft one of these defensive players that we're going to talk about tonight. So we have something to cover on Friday night.
And tonight's show, this show, whether you listen to it in the evening or the day, we're recording on a Thursday and a couple of days later than we normally do. But we're not doing a show next week. We're holding off until we do our mock draft the week of the draft. And in this episode, we're going to talk briefly about a couple of the issues going on, and then we will preview the defensive side of the ball on the NFL draft in terms of Arizona Cardinals. We're going to start off talking about a couple of topics. Cardinals have brought in. Have brought in or will bring in some players that are going to play on the edge at their new defensive end position. It looks like they are protecting themselves for the start of the season with Marcus Golden, kind of replacing Kareem Martin. It appears that will be the case. And then we're going to talk about briefly about some comments that David Johnson made that were kind of Bruce Arians-like before we head on to talk about the defense side of the ball. We'll talk each position. We'll talk the interior linemen. We'll talk the edge. We'll talk spaced linebackers, cornerbacks, and safeties. That's what we're going to start with. And we're going to start with the Cardinals brought in Connor Barwin, veteran defensive lineman, veteran pass rusher, had some really good seasons in terms of rushing the quarterback. Been pretty productive, 5 sacks each of the last 2 seasons. And he seems to have left town without a deal. Coming up next for the Cardinals is they're reportedly bringing in former Dallas Cowboys defensive end Benson Mayoa, who just 2 seasons ago had 6 sacks. What does this tell you, Seth, about the fact that they're bringing in now some veterans for the defensive end position?
You know, I like it, honestly. It's one of those things, though, where you look at it, right, and it's kind of a pick your flavor, and you and I have talked about this in draft references before, and now we can talk about it a little bit in terms of free agency. And that's, you have a choice. You have Connor Barwin, a known commodity, not the player he was 3 or 4 years ago when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles, but as Jess said, a solid, steady influence on the defensive side of the ball. A guy who has, you know, registered 5 sacks a season, the last 2 seasons. He's on the wrong side of 30, but honestly, on this defense, that may not be a bad thing. Then you have Benson Mayoa, who had 6 sacks in 2016, and then dropped down to 1 sack, but was highly productive as a guy that was getting pressures on the quarterback. He is a better athlete. He's 5 years younger than Connor Barwin, and he's probably going to be about, I would say, probably roughly half the price of Connor Barwin. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you look at it in the sense of, all right, well, we know they need edge depth. And not only that, they may need a starter for a game or two, right? We don't we're all very hopeful Marcus Golden will be back, but he's still only going to be roughly 10 to 11 months removed from his ACL repair. So we saw with Tyrann Mathieu, he wasn't the same player as he was starting his comeback either time. You know, it took him a couple of games to get into being the Tyrann Mathieu we knew and loved. Now we're talking about the same thing with Marcus Golden. So that's the question. Would you rather have the known commodity of Connor Barwin to give you, let's just call it 5 games while Marcus Golden gets back to 100%? Or would you rather have the upside, the unknown, and the potential of Mayoa to give you maybe 2 games and then be that third pass rusher? I don't know. I go back and forth. And right now, even though the numbers aren't as good, I kind of like the idea of Mayoa simply because he's younger. And I know this is going to sound weird, but they need to save as much money as they can and also need to try to catch some lightning in a bottle. So, you know, you're going to get Connor Barwin. And even if you get him 5 games, you'll probably get 2 sacks in those 5 games, and he'll probably end up with somewhere around 4 to 5 next season as a you know, part-time starter and then rotational defensive lineman. And so that's really the question for me. Do you want the steadiness or do you want the upside? And it's a coin flip, honestly.
And for me, it just makes a lot of sense because even you see just on the most recent flight plan episode the Cardinals have on Facebook, watch their offseason video series. They featured Marcus Golden. He's a guy that's really hard to bet against, but ACL tears are tricky. So while he's working his fanny off and he says he'll be ready for when the season begins, he might be able to play, but he's not going to, he's not going to come back in week one, even if he's available to play week one, and he's not going to play 75% of the snaps. He's going to be on a snap count. And so you need somebody who can play. And as of right now, there is zero anything, nothing you could be confident in outside of Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden on the edge playing defensive end. You've got guys. You've got players there, but you don't have anybody you're like, I feel comfortable with you actually being on the field with the other players. And so you have to bring someone in. So Benson Mayoa makes sense. Even if he's not a high sack guy, he'll create pressures. He'll cause disruption. Connor Barwin, kind of the same thing, only you add the elements of, you know, he's been on some winning teams. He was on the Rams last season. And granted, he'd have to adjust. He'd have to kind of adjust back a little bit as he was playing outside linebacker last year. So it just makes a lot of sense for me. I don't see any problem with it. In fact, I applaud it. And if we've wondered, well, what are they going to do with depth at defensive end? Benson Mayoa would kind of be, now, aside from the fact that he hasn't been an injury problem, their free agent signings have been, well, hopefully, they're always looking at the upside of what could be. And so they get something at a low cost with a high-end potential, and that's how you go with that. The other topic has been on the offensive side of the ball. It's David Johnson was on Adam Scheid's Mad Dog Radio the other day, and he was asked about what we can expect from Sam Bradford or the potential the Cardinals have with Sam Bradford at quarterback, and he was absolutely bullish. This is crazy talk. He not only said it, he doubled down and guaranteed, David Johnson guaranteed the Cardinals would have the league's top offense in 2018. As optimistic as that sound, all I can do is laugh at that because they were a bottom 13 in every category. And we saw when the Cardinals were a number one offense in 2015, the type of season it took from a lot of people. That meant Carson Palmer having an all-world year, a better year than we've ever seen him have before. It took Larry Fitzgerald having a great year. It took John Brown also having 1,000 yards. It took Michael Floyd being very good after that coming back from that hand injury. It took a committee of running backs combining for over 1,900 yards on the ground. So, I mean, Sam Bradford's never been a guy to throw for 4,700 yards and 35 touchdowns. David Johnson might rush for, if he's great, 1,400 yards. But even then, they'd still need another 500 yards from somewhere else.
Well, and you look at the other thing is it flies completely in the face of what Steve Wilks has kind of said he wants to do offensively, right? So now you're going to have the league's top offense, even though you want to be a ball control, run the football, grind it out and win with the running game and defense. And so you're going to have the top offense. I think David Johnson's just excited, and who can blame him? I mean, the guy missed an entire year of football. he's basically chomping at the bit at this point just to get back on the field. He's been okayed health-wise. He's back on the field. He's participating in whatever the camps are they're doing right now. And so he's excited, and that's a good thing. And I think the enthusiasm is great. And honestly, from that perspective, you're hoping that he can just stay healthy because you're expecting a big year from him. You know, you said 1,400 yards. What if he does something crazy like 1,500 yards rushing and 800 yards receiving and puts up over 2,300 yards from scrimmage? He has the ability to do something special this year. The question is, can the Cardinals surround him with enough help to get him there? Because you look at even Todd Gurley, who's a fantastic player, but it took, the maturation of Jared Goff. It took the additions of two veteran offensive linemen for the Rams before they got to that point. And now, and then last year, Todd Gurley was all of a sudden the best running back in the NFL, in the same way. Can the signing of Justin Pugh and Andre Smith, the health and hopefully the resurgence of DJ Humphries and Mike Iupati, and then please somebody find Larry Fitzgerald a partner in crime so there's another wide receiver on this team. But I mean, there's no reason to think that this is going to be a bottom five offense again in the league, but I don't see many instances where this is even a top 10 offense. And that's not because of lack of talent. I just don't see a scheme where Steve Wilks is going to want to.
And has Mike McCoy ever put together an offense that has been that prolific?
Outside of the Peyton Manning led ones? No. I mean, and no offense to Mike McCoy. Like, he's a very,
we know that, that offense right. was Peyton Manning.
Right. Run. It was Peyton Manning. It wasn't Mike McCoy. And again, no offense to Mike McCoy.
Well, and it was the smarts of Mike McCoy doing, okay, oh, Peyton, you're good at that. So we'll let you do your thing and we'll build our game plan around that. That's exactly what McCoy's reputation is. He will tailor a game plan and a system around the skills of your quarterback and players. And when you have Peyton Manning, you can do anything.
Exactly. So when you look at it, you have to like this and you have to like the idea that, that David Johnson has. I just don't think it's a realistic type thing.
The one thing that I take away, probably the biggest takeaway, is that what I'm seeing is that in a short amount of time, Sam Bradford has won over this Cardinals team and this Cardinals locker room in terms of his talent and ability. The team believes that he will be great and that they will be great with a healthy Sam Bradford. It reminds me exactly of how things went with Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer came, he's productive, but not much of a reputation. But as soon as he came in the building, the players saw the talent, they saw the man, and they believed, we protect him, we keep him upright, we'll be great. And so it's good to see, hey, you've got this veteran guy in Bradford, he comes in, and there's no doubt about it. Everyone in the locker room believes in Sam Bradford, or they're trying to convince us all that they believe it's Sam Bradford. But we've seen this before. You see someone with who is as talented as he's got some really good. He's good when he's healthy. He's not. I mean, the talent's there. He's been in offenses that sort of protect things. So the belief is there, which is you have to have that first. So it's he doesn't have to win anyone over. He's already done that.
Right, exactly. And you know, I did a radio spot this morning or, you know, that Thursday morning, and they asked me, you know, why Sam Bradford? And I said, it makes sense. You know, when you hear Steve Wilks talk about the offense he wants to have, an efficient offense. He wants to have an offense that moves the ball on the ground, is able to minimize turnovers and really rely on the defense and field positioning. Well, that's Sam Bradford. Like he's a highly accurate quarterback. He's a guy that doesn't take chances. He doesn't push the ball into spots they're not, you know, supposed to be. And he just doesn't ever turn the ball over. I mean, it's a rarity that he throws interceptions. So when you put all that together, that's the perfect quarterback. But like you said, he has to be on the field.
And with that, we'll wrap up this section of the Rise FC Red podcast. We're going to come back and we're going to start with the defensive interior. We'll talk about the defensive interior and we'll talk about the edge players who might be in play early, middle, late in the draft. That's coming up next on Rise FC Red.
My wife and I went to a wine festival the other day and the experience was wonderful. Tasting different wines from different vendors all over Arizona was a perfect way to spend a spring day, except for one little thing. I didn't get enough wine. Sure, you got enough taste, but really, sometimes you just want to sit back and enjoy a glass of wine. That's where Wink comes in. Wink, that's W-I-N-C, is the wine club for you. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine. How? Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, then shipped right to your door. And that's all starting at just $13 a bottle. Even if you don't know a thing about wine, just that you like to drink it, Wink makes it easy because they do all the work for you. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It's the best day of your month. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz, answer simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask, or translate into a recommendation. Then Wink sends wines curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections will be. Each month, there are new delicious wines available to be sent to you. And the best part, there are no membership fees, and you can skip any month or cancel at any time. Shipping is covered, and best of all, if you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love. No questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/cred, and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/cred for $20 off. trywink.com/SEERED.
We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. And let's start off our defensive preview with the interior alignment. I know it's not the biggest need, but I think it makes more sense for us to go basically from the front to the back of the defense, especially if we're going to rate it by things. We probably talk about cornerback first, maybe safety next, but cornerback. And after that, because there's no glaring need, after that, it's just stuff that you want to add because you always want to add strength on the interior. You definitely always want pass rushers. The Cardinals look set at linebacker for now, but after this season, who knows? We'll see about that. But we'll start with the defensive interior. Prospects at the top of the draft. The one name that keeps coming up over and over again is Washington's Vita Vea. And you have an interesting take on that as much as he is a big man, 345, 350 pounds, very productive, but this is not an Aaron Donald. Who is Vita Vea and why would he be worth or not worth the number 15 pick for the Cardinals?
When you look at Vea, he's a very talented player. And I want to say that first and foremost, I don't want people to think that I don't think he's a good player because I do. But when you look at Vea, the question is immediately asked, how much is he going to actually play? So when you watch Vea and you see his information, you know, the biggest things with him are he's only played 50% of his snaps in one season in college. So he's a junior, so only one of his seasons he played 50% of the snaps or more. So you're banking on taking a guy in the top 15 picks that is more of a prototype nose tackle than he is a guy that is going to be, like you said, an Aaron Donald, a guy in this draft, a Maurice Hurst type player. Now, that's not to say he's not going to be very good. The biggest question is going to be whether or not he's going to play enough snaps to benefit that pick. Because if you're getting a guy that, you know, we can just go off of Arizona Cardinals numbers last year, and so their defensive line played, you know, roughly 1,000 snaps. And so if you're getting a guy that's only playing 400 to 450 snaps at 15, and that's where he is as a player, that's really not great value. And so that's my biggest problem with Vea. It's not that I don't see him as a talent. It's just that I worry that grabbing somebody that is more of a traditional two-down player than a guy in today's NFL who fits more in the three-down lineman type role.
Well, and I think we can point to just a few years ago when the Cleveland Browns took Danny Shelton, who is also from Washington, built the same way. I think you could almost say they might be identical players. Now, Shelton is a good NFL player. Was he an impact player at all in Cleveland? I mean,
no. I mean, they traded him, right? They got rid of him. And they picked him in the top. I think he went like 12 or 13. So
yeah, roughly the same type of range the Cardinals are picking. So hey, sure, he's a nice player, but you could get that sort of player. I mean, Xavier Williams did that. Whatever, I can't remember his name now. The big guy that he escapes me.
Dan Williams
or Alameda Te'amu.
Yeah, Te'amu before he blew out the knee the second time. Yeah, I mean that's the thing. And when you look at this draft, right, you go through, and so we'll just kind of run through these guys that fit a similar mold. There's Tim Settle out of Virginia Tech, who's a you know, probably a guy that's going to be around right at 47. He is a similar type prospect in terms of movement and size, 6'3", 335. Then you have a guy in the terms of Nathan Shepard, who's kind of drawing rave reviews at this point. He's a small school guy, another small school guy. Everybody get excited. 6'5", 315 pounds. And his athletic profile was actually better than Vea's. So, you know, he's a little more athletic coming out of Fort Hays State. He is just a, you know, a mammoth dude. He's a really solid player. Then you have a guy, you know, that's, you have another guy in I can't pronounce anybody's name, so forgive me. But De'Adrian Sinat from South Florida, he's a late day two, early day three type of guy, right? So he's 6 foot but 315 pounds. So you're talking about a guy that's basically is as tall as he is wide. And so when you look at these guys, it's a question that we talked about a lot on the Draft Breakdown podcast. Can you get 80% of a guy at a cheaper rate? And so if you're going to draft Vita Vea at 15, can you get a player that is going to produce at 80% of him at 97? And, you know, that third round comp pick. And if you can, then why not get a player then that's going to play more impactful and a higher number of snaps in terms of that, you know, positional value.
If you look at Maurice Hurst, another top talent, is he a guy that could be in play for the Cardinals? I have not heard. That's the one thing. He was recently rechecked. We had that heart condition. He doesn't have to go for that medical recheck. So it looks like he's all clear health-wise, but I've never heard him in play for the Cardinals. Is 15 probably a little high? And is there anyone, is there any other interior lineman that the Cardinals should even consider in round one?
So there's a couple guys that I like. The first one would be, you mentioned Maurice Hurst. I like this guy a lot. He's a very talented player. He's a unique type of player at this point. You know, he's going to get talked about along the lines of Aaron Donald because of his size, or a Geno Atkins. He plays in the same way. So he fits the Cardinals. The question becomes, is he a guy that you invest in when you've got Olson Pierre and Robert Kimdiche? And so, and all these guys are going to fit in this category. And it's not that you can't play Kimdiche and Hurst together, but you need a guy that's more of a run stopping. You know, when you look at the Carolina Panthers defense, they had star Lotulelei, who was, you know, is going to be played by the Corey Peters role. And then you had Kwon Short. That's the Robert Kimdiche or Maurice Hurst role in this. I think that's why you haven't heard any of these guys that we'll talk about real quick. Maurice Hurst, or the other guy is Taven Bryan out of the University of Florida, 6'4", 290. He put up really impressive numbers at the combine for his size, but he's really more of an athlete right now than he is a football player. So that's going to be the question. His splash plays, though, holy cow. Like, those are entertaining to watch because you're like, what happened? How did nobody block this guy? And then you go back and watch, and he's so quick and he's so athletic that it's awe-inspiring to watch him play. There is one guy that I didn't mention, and I think just to prepare Cardinals fans in case it happens. I don't, you know, Justin, I don't know if it will, but, you know, it could. And that's Deron Payne out of Alabama. So he's more of like a Ndamukong Suh type of player, where he is 6'2", 310 pounds, but he moves like he's that, you know, 6'2", 285 type player. So he can technically play that one tech, or he can play that three tech, and you can have kind of a jumbo package where you're playing against the run with the idea of Corey Peters and Payne playing together, or you can get upfield and have two pass rushers with the idea of Payne, interior pass rushers with the idea of Payne and Pierre or Kimdiche. So he's like the one guy that could play either the three tech or the one tech. So three tech is usually considered a one gap penetrating type guy, and then a one tech's more of a traditional, closer to a traditional nose tackle type of player. And so Payne is the one player on the defensive line that could possibly do both. You know, these are all guys that we're talking about on day one, day two, maybe day three. A guy that really hurt himself, and I don't mean that in like a joking manner, that was going to be a nice prize on day three, or was Kentavious Street out of North Carolina State, who tore his ACL practicing. I think it was for the Giants. So, you know, it's just one of those situations that stuff happens every once in a while at workouts, and it's just it's sad. But there are definitely guys that you can get later in the draft. I mean, we don't have to cover them in depth, but you have Justin Jones out of NC State, who is a guy that kind of fits that one technique role. And then you have Star's little brother, and I use that term very loosely, Lotulelei, who's 6'2 and 330 pounds. So, like I said, he's a guy that could, and it's just kind of astutely pointed out, those are guys that's typically where you grab those guys, right? You get those guys late in the draft or in priority free agency. So that'll be kind of what to watch for.
A name that comes up that I run across on a lot of things is later in the draft, as we know, the Cardinals like small school guys, and maybe it's in part because we saw the Rodney Gunter signing, and the guy that kind of fits in that role, but definitely not as unknown is the guy PJ Hall, Sam Houston State, 6'1", 310. What blows you away is just the absolute staggering production in his college career. 86 and a half tackles for loss, 42 sacks. The body type is incredible. 700 pound squatter. Plus on top of that, his special teams play. He blocked 14 kicks in college. 14.
Well, and the crazy thing about PJ Hall is when you look at him, he doesn't look like he's 310 pounds. I don't know how many of our listeners have actually heard of PJ Hall. But like, if you look at him, you're like, wait, that dude weighs 315, and not in like a negative way. Like, he's put together. He's not a kind of a fat guy. He's really well put together. He's well defined. He doesn't match the body size, that 6'1", 310 pounds that you would imagine him to be. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I think you're right. And he's a guy that could, you know, go, he's probably going to go on late day two, honestly, because he is a nice player that has some ability that when you look at it, you can really, you could see the Cardinals liking somebody like that. Another name just to kind of know that I've heard people like as a one technique or a zero technique is Puna Ford out of Texas. And again, 5'11", but he's 305 pounds. So we're talking about guys that are just built like nose tackles. And so that'll be kind of what's interesting to watch.
We move out to the edge. Going to be interesting because in terms of the pass rushing ability, now we're going to see kind of a transition since we're not looking for necessarily the traditional 3-4 outside linebacker. So these guys are going to be a little bit bigger. And in fact, when you were talking about one of the guys, I thought maybe, well, could he play off the edge? Yeah, but as we look moving forward, the pass rushing, and when it comes to pure pass rushing, it is very difficult to get much production in terms of sacks after the first round. You've kind of been pounding your fist on the table for one guy in round one, that being Harold Landry. How does he fit in? Why should the Cardinals consider him at pick number 15? And if they did go with him, why should Cardinals fans not be upset with it?
Well, I think the first thing is we've talked about quite a bit Marcus Golden. And so when you look at Marcus Golden, there's two scenarios that come out. One is that he's not the same player, that he doesn't come back fully, and that the Cardinals, you know, need to move on, which isn't the best, right? That's not something we want. And the other one is that he comes back, he's healthy, he has another 10 to 12 sack year, and now all of a sudden he's a free agent pass rusher, and he's under 27. Like, those are things that never happens in the NFL, right? So we're talking about a guy now that's going to be looking for in the range of 12 to 15 million a year. If he comes back and has another, you know, double-digit sack season, because you're talking then about basically two out of three full seasons played with double-digit sacks. So what Harold Landry does is it hedges on both of those notions. He's a pure edge guy. He's not a tweener. He's not anything else. He's a guy that is incredibly athletic. He's a bit smaller than your typical 43 edge players, but he's a guy that is athletic enough, and he understands how to play. He understands how to rush the passer. When you watch him rush the passer, like, even Bradley Chubb, I don't think is as good at it as Harold Landry. So when you look at it from that perspective, you're looking at it as a guy that can really come in and be an impact player from day one. He can be the replacement of Marcus Golden and keep your pass rush at a high level in the possibility that Marcus Golden doesn't return. And it's something that we've seen with the best defenses, right? Is that they don't just have one or two guys. They have three or four. And so when you look at like the Denver Broncos, yeah, they had Von Miller and they had DeMarcus Ware, but they drafted Shane Ray. Why would they draft Shane Ray? Well, because those guys aren't going to play forever. So you have to plan for the future. And as Cardinals fans should be well aware, one of the hardest things to do is find a guy that can rush the passer. And so if you have to, and there's a good chance that you could lose one, you probably want to replace that guy before it's too late. And then you're looking for a replacement. So Landry would be that guy. I think, you know, it'd be an interesting pill to swallow another year where you're probably not going to get an every down starter. But when you look at it from a long-term perspective and you're looking at this as, okay, this is a transition year. Yes, you still want to be competitive, but more than that, you want to set Steve Wilks up for the long haul. And Harold Landry, in my opinion, does that better than any prospect that's not a quarterback.
Outside of Landry, any other edge guys that we should pay attention to day one, day two, who could be somewhat productive? I know a name that's out there is Marcus Davenport.
Yeah, Davenport is a really interesting one because he's the type of athlete that you typically see on day two. But because of the dearth of talent at the edge position, I don't know if you did you read or listen to or play back or get the transcript of the Bucky Brooks Daniel Jeremiah?
Haven't read through it completely yet.
Yeah. So one of the questions was what are the strengths of this class and what are the weaknesses? And the two weaknesses that they identified right off the bat were the lack of pure pass rushing talent and then the lack of offensive tackle talent. And so to me, it pushes guys like Marcus Davenport or Connor Williams up the board on where those typically would be guys that you grab on day two of the draft. Now, all of a sudden, because of the lack of prospects in this range, you're going to push up a guy that's a fringe anyways. So Davenport has one season where he's been productive, and that was 6.5 sacks. His season before that, he had 4 sacks. He's missed some games due to injury, not a ton, but you know, just some. And so when you look at him, there's a couple things that kind of stick out, right? One is that he's from the University of Texas, San Antonio. Where you play doesn't matter. If you can rush the passer, you can rush the passer. But I think the fact that his career numbers are close to like Harold Landry's best season. Landry had 16.5 sacks his junior year at Boston College. That's what the difference is to me, is that, you know, obviously it's still a crapshoot, it's the draft, but you've seen a high-end Landry. You haven't seen a high-end Davenport. 6.5 sacks, if that's the high end, that's not a good pick at 15, right? Like, that's just not good value. Now, if he was there at 47, that's great value. But in the same token, he is much more the prototypical 4-3 defensive end. 6'6", 264 pounds. He actually had a better 40 time than Landry, but I believe Landry's shuttle times were better than Davenport. So, you know, he's a very good athlete for his size. I mean, he's a freak of nature for what he is. But when you look at him from a production standpoint, that's always the worry there. Now, there are some interesting guys on day two. So those are kind of your day one guys. Landry, obviously Bradley Chubb's going to go before the Cardinals can pick. You know, he's the probably going to be the number two or I think at worst number six pick in this draft. Landry and Davenport are kind of your next two guys. I would say Landry's better than Chubb. That's just me personally, but you know, everybody's got their flavors here. But when you look at day two, there's actually some interesting guys this year. And one guy to keep an eye on is Sam Hubbard out of Ohio State. So Hubbard was kind of supposed to be the guy after Joey Bosa left, right? So he had 6.5 sacks as a freshman. And then he kind of tailed off last year in his sophomore year, and had 3.5 sacks. And then this year he bounced back a little bit, 7 sacks on the season. But here's the thing with Hubbard. He's 6'5", 265 pounds, so right around the same size as Marcus Davenport. And he tested better than Harold Landry at 15 pounds lighter. So his shuttle times were better than Landry. So that's what makes him really intriguing as in terms of a prospect. So you're talking about similar type of production as Marcus Davenport, but then similar type of athleticism as Harold Landry. So, you know, those numbers are, I mean, they're crazy to look at when you look at them from that. And his 3-cone is absurd. I mean, literally absurd. His 3-cone was a 6.84 3-cone. So if you put that 3-cone in against guys like skill position players,
that's defensive back numbers. I mean, sub-7 is what you want to see from your DBs, and that's good. Holy crap.
Right. Yeah, so you're talking about like high level ball carriers, you know, 3-cone time. So he's a unique athlete. When you look at his 3-cone time, it would be in the 82nd percentile for running backs. So I mean, he's in the 98th percentile for defensive ends. So that's how unique of a player he is when you look at him. So he's going to be a guy. I don't know if he's there at 47. There's already whispers that Seattle loves him, so that would make a lot of sense because he passes through a lot of their filters that they kind of require. And then there's a couple day three guys that are more what you would call 5 techniques. So that's head up over the tackle, and they're base defensive ends. So it would be a guy that's more of a run defender. And so, he's not going to get after the passer quite as well. And there's two guys to know there. There's Tyquan Lewis, another Ohio State product. When you go through this, you're going to hear a lot of the same schools because it's crazy like that. And then there's the other Ohio State player, Jalen Holmes. So those are two guys that'll be available on day 2, probably right around round 3. And then the other one's Deshaun Hand out of Alabama. He is kind of a borderline 5-tech, 3-tech. So he's a guy that you can talk me into him playing at a couple different positions. He's an incredibly versatile guy. He's not a pass rusher again. Like, he's not a guy that you're going to line up and say, go get him. But he's a guy that if you're concerned about Marcus Golden coming back and holding up in terms of playing all the snaps, he's a guy that you can draft on, you know, probably with that first third round pick, and then be able to rotate Golden in on passing situations, take kind of some of the wear off of Golden on rundowns.
And with that, we will wrap up this segment of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. When we come back, we'll talk about the linebacker position, the guys in space that will be playing in a kind of a new set for the Cardinals moving forward. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on Rise of Sea Red. And an interesting spot, it's a position where the Cardinals don't necessarily have any need. They could get some solid talent in the draft at linebacker. Cardinals currently have Daylon Buchanan, who appears to be slated to play that middle linebacker position, Hassan Reddick, who'll play one of the two other positions, and Josh Bynes, who looks like, as of right now, will be a starter as well. After that, it's simply depth, but it looks like at least the linebacker position, assuming health, is set. But there's some good talent in this draft, that a lot of players who fit what the Cardinals do. And even though they've used first round picks on what eventual linebackers in twice in the last 5 years, Seth's talked about on previous shows. There's a handful of linebackers who talent-wise match the draft slot. And who are those guys that could be who would fit in round one?
So there's four round one guys that are going to go in round one. There's Tremaine Edmonds, who by all accounts is just a freak of nature. So this dude's 6'5 and over 250, and he ran a 4.5 4.40. He's not even 20 years old yet. Like, he's legit a freak of nature in terms of size, speed type of player, and how physical he is at his age. There's a legitimate chance that he's not even on the board at 15. He's been mocked as high as 6 to the Colts that I've seen, and typically won't make it past that 10-11 stack of Oakland and Miami. So he's a absolute pipe dream. He would be your immediate starter at inside linebacker. I mean, we're talking a potential like Luke Kuechly, Brian Urlacher type of game-changing inside linebacker. So when Jess and I talk about this guy or these guys, we're not talking about, you know, getting a middle-tier starter. We're talking about a potential game changer at that inside linebacker position to kind of round out a young, athletic, and talented linebacking core. The next guy, at least for me, is Roquan Smith. Now, he's a little bit smaller, 6'1", 236. But when he plays, man, he plays fast. And he reminds me of a guy that you and I both liked 2 years ago coming out of LSU, and Deion Jones. So when you watch him play, he's you know, kind of that true scout term, sideline to sideline player. Like, he's all over the field. I love watching Roquan Smith play. Now, there's been a couple developments that have happened, and it's always good to hold these like previews till as long as you can, because it changes the complexity of the draft as a whole. And so now we talked about Tremaine Edmonds possibly going as high as 6, but now you have Roquan Smith, and he's been you know, he's been in that same talk as Edmonds. He could go to the Bears at 8, to the Raiders at 10, to the Dolphins at 11. And now a new player, or, you know, a new suitor has emerged, potentially with the news of Reuben Foster's pending arrest. So now all of a sudden the San Francisco 49ers, who sit with the 9th pick in the draft, they could be on the clock and needing an inside linebacker, even though they just drafted one a year ago. So when you talk about that, it's going to be tough to see either of those guys fall to the Arizona Cardinals. But don't get concerned, because there's two other guys that are likely to go in the first round this year. The first one's Leighton Vander Esch out of Boise State. It's interesting to see comparisons of him, because when you look at the numbers, when you crunch the numbers, when you put them in to, you know, your mock draftables, when you put them into your when you put them into the different databases that pop out, a name that Cardinals fans should be overly familiar with pops back out to you, and that's Carlos Dansby. And so when you look at Vander Esch, he's a super athlete. He's incredible within the short range. He's kind of your prototype inside linebacker. Again, when we're talking about inside linebacker, we're talking about a guy that has to be able to play in space quick, but also has to be able to work through trash. And so that, you know, that's kind of who Vander Esch is. For me, you're going to have to sell me on him at 15. And it's not because he's that far of a drop off from the top two guys in Edmonds and Smith, but I just have other guys that I would rather take at 15. Now, if the Cardinals did it, they would be doing it because it fits an absolute need in that linebacking core. And the last guy that's going to go likely in round one is Rashawn Evans out of Alabama. Again, another Alabama player. He is just a prototype Alabama inside linebacker. Just kind of that natural player on the inside, is able to do a lot of different things. Here's the question, though. Is he a guy that has to play in a 3-4? And you might think that's weird for an inside linebacker, but you do wonder if he has if he's able to hold up in a 4-3 as the inside linebacker, or if he's going to play kind of an outside backer role in that case, in which case you've probably got two of those. So you're probably looking for a more true inside linebacker type. And that's where this draft kind of, I won't say goes off the rails, but in terms of finding kind of true Mike linebackers, which the Cardinals need, it becomes a little more difficult. So when you look at it from that perspective, after Vander Esch, after Edmonds, after Roquan Smith, you have guys that profile better in a 3-4 inside linebacker role or a run and chase outside linebacker role, a la like a Telvin Smith in Jacksonville. A guy that has really drawn a lot of eyes is Darius Leonard out of South Carolina State, but he's another super undersized linebacker. I really like the way he plays. It's going to be a hard sell for me on day two to draft another sub 220 linebacker. When you look at a guy that never kind of reached that potential, that ability that everybody expected him to, but man, the talent is there and it's tantalizing, is a guy in Malik Jefferson out of Texas, 6'3", about 240, a 4.5 guy in the 40-yard dash. He is an athletic freak. He is a guy that is able to, play probably all three linebacker spots. And he profiles similar to Lawrence Timmons, who played for Pittsburgh for, I think, roughly 2 decades. So, he's a guy that he has the athletic build, the athletic profile. He never quite put it all together. And then there's some other like high end guys that I like, but again, you're going to have to sell me on where you play them, because I don't know this is a different defense. Jess just said Dale Buchanan sounds like he's going to be the Mike, the middle linebacker, but man, he's going to be a small inside linebacker in a 4.3. He's going to be probably 30 pounds lighter than every other inside linebacker in a 4.3 defense in the league. And so when you look at that, though, then you start to say, okay, well, we talked about Rashawn Evans. We talked about Darius Leonard. Then you have two other guys that kind of make sense. One was the darling of the combine and a guy that a lot of people like, Shaquem Griffin out of Central Florida. He's probably a guy that's going to go on day three, but from an athletic standpoint, 6'1", 230, and runs a sub 4.440. Obviously people are going to have concerns without, he's missing a hand for those that aren't familiar with him. But he's a very, to say he's a good athlete is a complete understatement. He is a special talent and a special player, but he's a day three type player. And then the last guy that I like, but again, we're talking really, really tiny, and that's Dorian O'Donnell, out of Clemson. And so again, you're talking about a guy that kind of fits that in that same role as Dayon Buchanan, 6'1", 215. But again, another really solid athlete, a guy that has been super productive out of Clemson. And again, we're talking about a day three guy now. So, there are four day one linebackers. There's probably going to be a handful of others, but I talked about three day two linebackers. And then, when you look at O'Daniel and Griffin, you're talking about, a couple day three linebackers. There's other guys that we'll talk about and kind of cover if the Cardinals end up taking them, but this is a really strong class at off-ball linebacker. And so it makes a lot of sense to see the Arizona Cardinals kind of address that position and fill out that roster or that depth chart with three young guys. Not that there's anything wrong with Josh Bynes, but there's a reason that Josh Bynes has been on a number of different teams over those years. And it's not because he lacks desire or fight. It's just that he's not quite as talented as maybe some of these younger guys could be. And so, again, you get a chance at Tremaine Edmonds, you're going to have to really sell me on not drafting him. So, you know, if I'm ranking hierarchy in this draft class of non-quarterbacks, it's going to be Harold Landry 1, and then Tremaine Edmonds is probably 3, and we'll talk about 2 in a second.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about the defensive backs. We'll come on back next on Rise Up Sea Red, the peak position of big interest for the Cardinals. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, and now we'll wrap it up. We'll talk about the defensive backs. Number one, cornerbacks, which is kind of probably the biggest need the Cardinals have on the defensive side of the ball. And this is reportedly a deep class for talent, perhaps not necessarily for high-end starters, but for guys who can start and make contributions even right away. The names that we've heard several times in mock drafts, you've got obviously Denzel Ward, the top guy, Ohio State. You got Jair Alexander. You got guys like Josh Jackson out of Iowa. Who are some of the top-end guys who might be players who could be in play in round one?
So I don't think Denzel Ward will be there at 15.
But, no, not likely.
But he would be my number two. So like I said, Harold Landry's 1. I would say Denzel Ward 2, Tremaine Edmonds 3. All three guys are going to likely be gone at 15. So when you look at Denzel Ward, oh man, he is so good. when you talk about a guy that coming out of basically a factory of defensive backs that are going to be all pros in the NFL. You know, Marshawn Lattimore, Malik Hooker, out of Ohio State last year, and Ward may have been the most talented, and that's saying a lot. Like, this dude is a freak of nature. His coverage ability is unreal. The way he works, I think he's a top five player in this class because we're talking, again, positional value, and then a guy that's actually been a high-end productive player for a number of years. 32% completion rate over his last two seasons at Ohio State. And it's not like Ohio State was playing in not big games, right? Like, they were playing in high-stakes games a lot of the time. And so and Ward was one of the top corners for that team. But here's the thing with Ward, right? He can play inside or slot. And guess what the Cardinals need? They need both. So if he needs to play slot to start with, he can do that. If he needs to play boundary to start, he can do that. He can do anything that is needed to be done at the cornerback position. He's a unique talent. It's going to be hard to see him there. Now, Josh Jackson out of Iowa, you talked about a little bit. I have a feeling that Steve Wilks is going to like Josh Jackson because he is a long and physical corner. And if we know one thing about Wilks and what he likes, it's guys that are big and physical. So let's go to Jair Alexander real quick, because he's been mocked quite a bit to the Arizona Cardinals, wouldn't you say?
Recently, especially. He's been kind of a trendy pick right now with, you know, moving away from the quarterbacks. He's kind of the guy that people are pegging at for the Cardinals.
So when you look at Jair, right, he is a super athlete, 5'11", 190 pounds, 4'3", 840. So when you look at those numbers, those are, you know, high end numbers in terms of athleticism. But and he is an aggressive, feisty player when you talk about a guy that's coming, you know, willing to come up and hit. But when you watch him play, there are times when you wonder every once in a while if he's engaged. And so maybe that was because he was so good at Louisville. And so, it's more of a consistency thing. Like, he just needs to be, pressed more and have to work more. Or maybe it's just, you know, that type of player. But when you kind of transpose Alexander and Josh Jackson, there's two things you see. One is Alexander's far superior athletically. And he has that tenacious, you know, kind of ability that Steve Wilks likes out of his defensive backs. But then you put on Josh Jackson's tape, and he's long. He's 6'1", but he's got long arms. He's able to change directions really well. 6'8", 6'3", cone. And he has a really good vertical, 38 inches. He's a guy that moves well in short areas. He's maybe not as good of a man cover corner, but he is a guy that looks like the mold of Steve Wilks corners. Now, I feel like 15 is way too rich for any of these guys outside of Denzel Ward, but you know, I do like this class, and this class isn't just two or three guys. So we talked about Jair Alexander, talked about Josh Jackson. Another guy that Cardinals fans will probably not be interested in because of the way his circuitous route to being a defensive back, but that would be Carlton Davis out of Auburn. So he played running back for a little bit, right? So that's
though he's played cornerback for longer than Brandon Williams did. Yes. So it's a little bit different. Brandon Williams had one season under his belt before getting drafted by the Cardinals and hasn't really done anything yet. Maybe that'll change this year. But yeah, Carlton Davis, a little bit more experienced.
Right. And he is, again, he is built like a running back, 6'1", 205. Not quite as athletic in terms of speed and everything. But when you watch him play, he plays like a running back. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a, like, he is physical. He likes to maybe be a little too physical at times. So I think he's going to endear himself to Steve Wilks as well, because we know that's what Steve Wilks likes out of his corners. However, and you and I have talked about this quite a bit, I don't see Wilks and the Cardinals going with a cornerback at 15, because and maybe I'm reading this wrong, because Wilks was just the cornerback or the defensive back coach, and then, you know, only had one season as the defensive coordinator. But you know, when it comes to defensive backs, Wilks has always been a guy that's like, I can develop these guys. Like, just give me clay to mold, and I'm gonna do it. And so the two names to watch, and these are guys that are going to go on day two, and they're super Wilks type defensive backs. The first one's Holton Hill out of Texas, 6'3", 200 pounds. But he is, again, another physical guy, a guy that likes to play kind of facing the quarterback more. So he might be a little more, be a better fit as a zone guy. But that's something that we've seen Wilks do, is he plays kind of a mixed zone and man route matching concepts. And so Hill would make sense there, because he's a guy that he's physical, he's athletic, but he's big, and he likes to hit. All those things are kind of important to Steve Wilks. The other guy is a guy that you and I have mocked to the Arizona Cardinals on day three. He's a guy that, I don't see him talked about a ton. Maybe it's just because he's from Alabama. That's Tony Brown. So again, 6 foot, 200 pounds, but this dude ran a 4.35 40. So
he looks like, to me, like I was looking at some of the measurables, he would be a guy that Steve Keim would be absolutely in love with. They were in love with Brandon Williams and his movement skills and his speed. Tony Brown has that. Only he actually played the position. Actually, both Brown and his teammate, Anthony Averett, as well, would be – they're both of them are guys I'd like – I bet the Cardinals would be in love with both of them. But Brown a little more so, because he's got the bigger frame.
Yeah. And so when you watch him, he is a guy that you may have to – again, you may have to do more, slightly different coverage ideals, but you can get him in round three. You can bring him up to speed because he does have the athleticism to play man to man. He has to learn it. That's not a Nick Saban thing. Like, he doesn't teach them great technique in man to man. So he's a guy that would make a ton of sense to me. He's a guy that I think the Cardinals are going to like on day two, you know, in round three. It's just a matter of if he's available. You know, you mentioned a bunch, and there's so many, and like, I don't want to go on and this to be a 4-hour podcast. So, but you know, the one guy I want to mention, cause he has some, he has a little bit of, in terms of, local flair, is that Isaiah Oliver out of Colorado. He went to somewhere. I think he went to Brophy. But he's going to be a day, you know, late day one or day two type guy. And he is incredibly aggressive and an incredibly physical as a defensive back. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. Just some names quickly that, I've kind of singled out as guys that fit the Wilkes size structure that we've seen him kind of favor. Isaac Yidiam out of Boston College. And again, I'm probably butchering all these names, but you'll get the idea. But he's a day three or late day two, early day three, sorry, round three, round four type of guy. And then you mentioned him, Anthony Everett. He's a little thinner than the right. Wilkes guys normally are, but his ability as a kind of pattern match guy is really important, and he moves really well. He might be a better cover guy than anybody else we've talked about after Denzel Ward. I just don't know if he fits the tough mold, but he fits from the size profile and the athleticism. He really does make sense.
And it's safety. This is going to be an interesting position because they feel pretty set at safety. If you've been a listener of the podcast for a long time, then you know this about the Cardinals and with Steve Keim, safety is not a premium position. And if they're going to go after a guy early in the draft, it will have to be something more than a box safety. He'll have to be great in coverage. And really, if you look at Jamal Adams, was a guy that the Cardinals really liked. They have to take Buda Baker. They traded up for someone who can do everything, who's versatile, can do lots of things, be physical, be a leader, play in coverage, and kind of do all of that. Otherwise, they kind of get production from safeties in a lot of places. So do you see, I mean, Minkah Fitzpatrick is obviously the guy at the top of the draft, and there's virtually no chance that they get him. I would say correct. There's virtually zero chance that he's going to be around at 15.
Well, and there is a chance because it's similar to Malik Hooker last year. So that was our thought on Malik Hooker, and then Jamal Adams ended up going first. So the question with Minkah becomes, do teams see him as a guy that can play corner? If not, then maybe he is a guy that falls to like that 15 spot. But again, I'm not sure how he can take the Antoine Bethea role, don't get me wrong. But again, we're talking about at 15, is he a guy that you want to make that play for? Derwin James, though, is a guy that I have nowhere to put him, but I'm going to find a place to put him on my defense. Derwin James is everything that we've waited for Dalen Buchanan to become. He is an absolute monster. And I think he's in that kind of Cam Chancellor mold as in terms of making a statement and kind of a putting teams on notice. He is an alpha to the nth degree in terms of how he plays and everything in that nature. So when you look at all of that, I don't think safety comes into play in this draft. I think James will be drafted early, and I think Fitzpatrick will be drafted early. There are some guys later in the draft that could make sense. Another Texas player, Deshaun Elliott, I think is a nice kind of player. he's a guy that can maybe take over for Bethea, and he's a day three player. We're not looking for starters. Like, we're not looking to find guys that are going to replace the guys in house. And then another guy that I'll just mention, because he's a guy that is, again, kind of local, and I'm going to butcher his name. His name's, I think it's Dane Cruikshank out of Arizona, but he's a really intriguing talent, because he's a guy that he tested really well, 6'1", 206, and he was a 4'4 guy, like 4'4", 1, and then he had really good cone and shuttle times. So he's an athletic guy. And so he's that type of day three safety that you see teams take, use him as a special teams guy in year one, and then work him into the rotation in year two and three. That would make a lot of sense to me, because he fits the Steve Wilks size, speed, athleticism, and physicality profile. So when you combine all that with the fact that you're talking about a guy that you may be able to get in round four or five, so you use that, you know, round four compensatory pick, man, that all of a sudden that makes a little bit of sense to me. You know, those are just two of the like later safeties, and there's so many safeties and it's hard to keep up with them. I don't really do a whole lot of safety watching, because
here's a guy that I think athletically will jump off the table. That's Troy Apke, Penn State, 6'1", 200 pounds, 41 inch vertical leap, 6'5", 6'3", cone, 4'3", 4'40", out of Penn State. I haven't seen him play, but when I looked at the combine numbers, that stands out. I don't know what his tape is like, and I haven't heard much of him, but have you heard what has that guy done on tape, and would he be – he looks like athletic, a guy the Cardinals would drool over.
Right, and he's another one of those guys that fits all of the profiles that you look for, and he's a guy that he's going to get drafted because of his special teams play. He hasn't done a whole lot in terms of production at Penn State. He is kind of the other safety after the Marcus Allen guy at Penn State, who's super talented and likely a day two pick. So when you look at Apke, you're looking at a guy that's likely going to be like a round 6-7 type pick, and he's going to get picked again because he does a really nice job on specials, and he's going to be a guy that he can work in a lot of different areas on the defense because of his size and speed that you talked about, athletic ability. I just don't know how early you take somebody like that.
And any other names to pay attention to? Names that I've heard come up, not so much, but kind of the small school guys. So you got Jacksonville State, Ciaran Neal. Not the most athletic. I mean, his 40 time doesn't match his leaping ability. 4.56 40, 40 and a half inches, 3 cone right at 7 seconds. So it looks like he's a guy who is more athletic than his 40 time, but maybe, you know, but the small school guy. Justin Reed is another name for Stanford that you've heard. He's kind of, isn't he the little brother of Eric Reed who makes all the noise right now because he's the new Colin Kaepernick?
Yeah. And Reed's a super talented player, but again, he's kind of Reed. And then the kid out of Wake Forest, along with Marcus Allen, who I kind of just mentioned, are all going to fall into that same, you're going to have to talk me into him type position, where I don't know if Jesse Bates, sorry, the name was escaping me, it was going to drive me insane, but Jesse Bates, you know, those are all guys on day two, day three, that like you talked about earlier, do they need another safety? I mean, especially that early, it's kind of like the running back thing. Like if you get a Jesse Bates, who's a high end player at 79 or even 97, okay, then I see it. You know, Justin Reed, same thing. But if you, you know, you don't want to pull the trigger on one of these guys at 47, because that's a lot of investment at the safety position. So when you look at the safeties, there's one more name I forgot to mention. I had it written down, Kaiser White. One, because I like the name, but two, again, fits the profile. 6'2", 216, out of West Virginia. So, and he was Kevin White's little brother, and I use that term loosely. So he is a, I don't remember. I don't know if you remember, I did a Vine before Vine died, of KJ Dillon in a game against the Arizona Cardinals in preseason. And he, tried to kill Andre Ellington on the sideline, and he almost did it. I mean, it was incredible to watch. And Dillon actually retweeted it. And that's always my image of all West Virginia safeties, because they play with the intention of trying to hurt you. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I'm not saying they're dirty players, but they look at every hit as an opportunity to run through you and punish you. And so, you know, White is another one of those guys. And so when you look at kind of what the Cardinals have at safety right now, they have a sage veteran with, you know, to play the center field. They have the electric young kid in Buda Baker. But they don't really have that kind of prototype strong safety thumper right now, because Tyvon Branch isn't back. You know, they haven't really addressed the strong safety position. So you could sell me on a Kaiser White or a Marcus Allen on, you know, late day two, early day three type numbers. But for the most part, I think you'd really have to be able to get Derwin James at 15 before, you know, if you're going to want to sell me on drafting a safety.
And with that, that wraps up this show, this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We've previewed the defense. We will come back in our next show. It'll be the week of the draft. It'll be our mock draft. So we'll go through the first round, and then we will make our predictions. We've been pretty good about the Cardinals picks the last couple of years. We'll see about the rest of the way. But you can find us, you know, if you're listening to the show, you know how to find us. But if you haven't yet, head on over to the Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the show so you don't ever have to find it again. Give us a 5-star rating. We'd love that. You can find us on Google Play, on Blog Talk Radio, on Audio Boom, on Revenge of the Birds. It's featured there. It's featured on my site, CardsWire, TuneIn Radio, Spotify. There's everywhere. If you can find the podcast, you can play it. Listen to it. We love the fact that you're listening. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is wrapping up this edition of the Rise of Seaward podcast. We'll be back in a week and a half. Mock draft. Cardinals say, rise up, Red Sea. We change it to Rise Up Sea Red.